how are you going to be using it every day? And then prioritizing the features that are going to make your family's life easier. So what's the perfect pram for your bestie? It may not be the perfect pram for you.
Welcome to Parenthood, where our lives and stories aren't perfect, but very real. I'm your host, Leonie Akidinor, and each week I'll be peeling back the often silent struggle we face as parents and bringing you guilt-free conversations to help you feel seen and heard. It's like group therapy. Leave your judgment at the door. Let's begin.
Welcome to the show.
Emily, welcome to the podcast. It's so good to have you on with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for those listening, I'm joined by Emily Stone, who's a mother of two young children, Mimi and Will, and the successful founder of the Baby Bee Group. So in 2015, she co-founded Baby Bee, and her passion for designing prams and other baby essentials has been her driving force behind all of the success. Aside from family and business, she loves a good glass of wine and is not embarrassed to admit that she loves a trashy reality TV show. Girlfriend, you are speaking my language. I love a trashy TV show. What's your favorite? Come on, give us the DL.
I could choose a favorite, but last night I turned the TV on and didn't realize that Max has been going for the last however long.
Yes.
So I've got 5 episodes to catch up on over the weekend, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, so am I. I'm a big Mass fan, I'm not going to lie. I love that. So, look, I'm so thrilled that you're here chatting with us today. We actually let our audience know, and so many audience members were thrilled to hear from you and get all of your wisdom. Obviously, prams is your jam. We'll definitely dive into a few questions from our audience. But firstly, I want to know the woman behind the brand. So I actually did a little bit of research on you, and I found this amazing quote that you actually said, and I want to read it out to everyone listening. So you said, "Undoubtedly, the greatest hurdle I've faced is finding balance between motherhood and my role as a company founder while returning to work. Gradually, I'm learning to let go of the notion that I can excel in both realms with the same level of dedication as if I was solely focused on either one. I feel like literally drop the mic moment. Like, I think so many of us, our listeners can very much relate to that. A lot of our listeners are working parents. So look, talk to us about this quote. Talk to us about the juggle that you often experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the biggest challenge by far is just that merging of my business life and motherhood. When I first had Mimi, Baby Bee was 5 years old, maybe 6 years old. And I feel like I'd sacrificed a lot over those years to get the business to where it was. Mm-hmm. And so I was really terrified about losing the growth momentum that we had and not achieving continued year-on-year growth. I genuinely believed that I could do it all, that I could continue outputting the same amount with work. I could raise a child and give her all the love and attention and care that she deserved. I could still be a great wife and sister and daughter and friend and all of it. And I genuinely, I know it sounds delusional, but I genuinely believed that I would be able to make it happen. And I just need to become more efficient with how I was, scheduling time, and that I'd be able to do it. So what that looked like for me, I pretty much went straight back to work with both kids, and I brought the kids to work with me. So with Will, my second, he came a week early, so I didn't have any time off work. I had him, and it was a relatively straightforward, don't want to say easy birth because they never are, but it was easier than Mimi. So I think it was 2 or 3 nights after I'd had him, I was in hospital. I was on a video call with our engineers and designers over in Europe, having a video call from my hospital bed. The day that we left hospital, I went to a board meeting. And so Will attended his first board meeting when he was 4 days old. So I jumped straight back into it. And that was second time around, so I'd had a bit of experience. That didn't happen with Mimi quite as quickly. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so then he came to work with me. The first 3 months I was just looking after him here. My team are amazing, and I think they really enjoy having – they've got the office dog, and then they started having the office babies. The first 3 months both my kids were really good sleepers, so I was able to just have them either in the bassinet or have them on me in the carrier and just standing up and working. And then after that, we hired a nanny to come to work and look after them so that I could continue breastfeeding and see them throughout the day. I'm really grateful that I, you know, not everyone is in a position where you can take your child to work. So I'm very grateful that I was able to do that and that I had that experience and I got to spend that time with them whilst not letting go of the business. But equally, it was incredibly it still is. I've still got Will, here now. It's really challenging to split your attention. I'll be in important meetings, wrangling a screaming child onto my boob to try and calm them down and have a feed without flashing everybody. Or I'll be in the middle of, you know, numbers and spreadsheets and deep into, you know, analytics and I can hear this baby crying in the background with the nanny trying to get them down and trying to stop myself from jumping up at every cry. And so it was, it's been a very difficult juggle. But as I said, I'm very grateful to have had that experience. And I think for the most part, I have been able to juggle a lot, but my health and well-being took a massive back step, was prioritized straight to the bottom. And whilst I was able to juggle a lot, I had multiple mini breakdowns. And for me, every time I got really, really stressed, the first sign that my body was not handling it was that I would get blocked ducts and I'd be on the verge of mastitis. That probably happened 30 times, I'd say. So, there were a lot of cracks showing and, it was difficult. I'd say it's probably only been the last, last 4 months I don't know what happened, what changed, but I've definitely got a lot better at just being kinder to myself, letting go of some really unrealistic expectations, following my gut when it comes to the kids, just being grateful for what I have and I guess accepting the fact that whatever I can achieve is enough and being at peace with that.
It's a big learning curve to even get there. I'm not even sure I can say I'm there either, but I just listen to your story and I just think, goodness me. So did you have sort of any mental health support, for example, like did you lean on a therapist or just any, what kept you grounded? Do you exercise? Do you meditate? You know, what keeps you grounded?
Yeah. So I hadn't seen anyone during that time. I had previously, but not during those last 3.5 years. I used to meditate. Again, that was one of the first things that stopped happening. I used to exercise constantly. Again, that stopped happening. So I really deprioritized anything to do with my own well-being. And I think that's why I had so many little mini breakdowns. I guess, I'm just lucky to have an amazing husband who he would see them coming and sometimes be able to stop me, make me take a deep breath and put some things in place. Things like help around the house and things like that to make life, to take some of the load off. I also have an amazing family. So I'm very lucky to have a lot of support. Mum's been great with helping with the kids. Got two amazing sisters. And then, as I said, my team at work are amazing. So I've been able to come in every day almost since they were both born and talk to. We've got so many mums in the team, so I've had that support as well, which has been incredible. Yeah.
It's so critical, isn't it? You kind of do need a village. And I think obviously our circumstances were probably a little bit more extreme than others in that you had such high competing priorities, right? Like not easy when you're running a massive business and that relies on you, you know, there's only one of you to go around and similarly one of you to go around for your children. Yeah. So what a juggle. But I guess so many listening can relate to that to some extent and going, yeah, I always feel torn. Yeah. Looking back on that experience, and it sounds like you're still in it to some extent, you said, because how old are your kiddos now?
Mia's 3.5, Will is about 14, 15 months.
Okay, so he's still baby. Yeah. So what do you say to, you know, those working parents out there who are trying to juggle it? I don't know, any words of advice putting you on the spot?
Yeah, and I'm definitely by no means the expert here. I guess I think a big part of it is changing our mindset. You know, even by saying, you know, you've got to be able to achieve work-life balance. I mean, I don't know that that balance can really even exist when you're in those early years of having kids and trying to juggle everything. So I think it's just, about changing your mindset, acknowledging that you might not have this balance for a while. You can't do it all, but that's okay, and you're going to get through it, and it's a time in your life, and things will change and get back to normal, but for now, just be kind to yourself and cut yourself some slack. I think we don't really have the village that they used to have to help us raise our children. And, a lot of us are coming back to work and have so many things to juggle. I think we just have to acknowledge that. And, I mean, it's easier said than done, of course. But, we have to cut ourselves some slack. We cannot do everything and still have this perfect, you know, put up this perfect social media front that we can have it all. I think I had a business coach who said to me at one point, when it comes to self-care, you've got to be able to sprinkle a bit of joy into your week. So she's like, Em, you sit down with me all the time and you give me all the right answers. You know exactly what you should be doing. You should be eating better. You should be prioritizing your own health, doing some exercise, doing those things. But you keep just telling me, like, you've got to go for a run. You've got to start doing Pilates. You've got to start getting up at 5 a.m. to get some strategy time in. She's like, think about what gives you the most joy in life. What brings the biggest smile to your face when it comes to you and your well-being? And try and just sprinkle a little bit of that throughout your week, and it will have a big difference. And so for me, one of those things is going out for dinner or drinks with friends or my sisters. And I noticed a massive difference when I let go of the, okay, you've got to exercise and eat well and do all of these things, and said, no, self-care is me going out tonight for a few hours with friends and having some amazing food and drinks. My week just was transformed just by that one dinner, because it just that's what brings me energy. And so if you can try, and I know it's so hard when you're in the thick of it going, how the hell am I going to get out tonight? But if you could, whatever it is for you, if you can just try and like sprinkle a little bit of that in, that's going to give you the energy that you need to help with everything else. That's really important.
It's so good, isn't it? It's such a good point. It's reframing what self-care looks like, you know, and it doesn't have to be what you typically think, where it's like, do all of the, you know, the shoulds, you know, I should go off for that, right? You know, it's actually like, what lights me up? And that's self-care. So such a nice reminder.
Yeah.
So look, as you said, such a big juggle. I want to delve into obviously your area of expertise, but before we go into it, tell us why did you start Baby Bee? Well, tell us the story.
Yeah, so it was, I'd say, almost 10 years ago. My partner and I had both had a bit of experience working with online businesses and direct-to-consumer companies. And so we'd seen the benefits that the benefits and efficiencies of what a D2C company can look like. We were looking at multiple products, so it wasn't just prams that we'd been looking at, but the pram industry at that time we felt definitely had the most opportunity there. Back then you had your high-end prams that were around almost at $2,000 mark, and, you know, they looked amazing. They had all the great functionality. They were quality products. But anything that was cheaper was really ugly. It was just they were purely built for functionality to get you from A to B. And, yeah, not a lot of thought at all had gone into the style and aesthetics of the product. So we thought, okay, cool. We'll set up a D2C company, online only, and we'll be able to cut out those distributor costs and the retailer costs that all of the big international companies have to pay. And that can often be up to like 50% of what the retail price is of a pram. And, we'll be able to create high-quality products that include everything you need, that have all the great functionality, but for a fraction of the cost. And, so that's what we did.
Yeah, that is amazing. Like such, epic business know-how then. My biggest thought is, did you have the pushback of, oh, well, hold on. I mean, because I know that with your with Baby B, you actually there's a return policy, I believe. So if someone, for example, receives a pram because they weren't able – I'll pause there. Is there a showroom for people to be able to see the prams in?
We only opened our showroom like in the last 6 months, and it's only at our head office in Yarraville. So that's the only place. Okay. So not really.
So did you then receive pushback? I guess I'm getting to the question I was just thinking of around, hold on, but I want to be able to go into a store and try the pram out before I'm going to buy it. Like, how did you tackle that challenge?
Yeah, definitely. So I think the generation coming through were feeling a lot more comfortable about buying online. So we were lucky there. We knew that there was always going to be a percentage of the market that did need to touch and feel. So what we created was a 9-month free return policy. So customers can purchase, set the pram up at home, push it around their living room, make sure that it is the right perfect pram for them. And if not, they can rebox it, send it back, and get a full refund.
That is amazing. 9 months sounds very generous. How did you land on the 9 months?
I think the 9 months is we just looked at, look, how long's your pregnancy for? 9 months. And, just for that peace of mind that if you do buy something early on and maybe things don't go to plan or whatever happens, you've always got that peace of mind that you can return the product.
Yeah, it's literally amazing. I absolutely love everything that you are doing. I'm going to delve into some of our audience questions. Yeah. So you just mentioned there about price, right? So one of the audience members said, does an expensive pram really mean a better pram? Talk to us about that.
So not always. And I think as I just touched on before, if you can buy direct from the brand, then you're going to be able to cut out a lot of those distributor margins, the retailer margins, as I said. So that's what we do at Baby B and Million Coop. It can cut out almost 50% of the cost there. So,
huge.
In some circumstances, no, price does not equal a better product.
And so just out of curiosity as well, what is sort of the most expensive part of a pram? I guess as you pay more, what are you typically getting, you know, is it better quality tires or where does the money go, on a pram cost?
Yep, definitely. So it's just better quality materials all over. So from your fabrics, you're going to get more durable fabrics. You're going to have better sun protection in the fabrics. They're going to feel better. They're going to look less wrinkled. They might have PU coatings on them, so they're a little bit water resistant. You'll have a really high grade aluminium used in the frame that's lightweight as well as being really sturdy rather than steel. Less room for rust and things like that. Definitely with the tires. So your cheaper prams will have what's called EVA tires or EVA wheels. They, if you go over fine gravel or stones, like you'll see the imprint in the wheels. We've seen, you know, instances of online gum nuts stuck inside wheels. The higher quality prams for those larger prams, there is a space for EVA because they are very, very light. So all travel systems will typically use EVA, but in your full size prams, I guess, they're using a much higher quality material that you will never see any wear and tear to those wheels.
Yeah, wow. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Another question, talking about wheels, someone's wrote in, does the size of the wheels have anything to do with the sturdiness of the pram?
Yes, absolutely. So if you try and imagine a little tiny travel stroller versus a big tandem inline double stroller, you've got these tiny little wheels versus really big wheels. Absolutely. It's going to feel a lot better for bub and a lot better for you to push in that bigger stroller with the bigger wheels. It's also true when it comes to off-road use. So the bigger the better for wheels, especially those front wheels. So again, imagine that travel stroller. If that little wheel gets stuck in a pothole, it's going to jam up. You're going to have to lift the whole pram to get over it. If you think about a three-wheel jogging pram, some of those front wheels are almost like a bike tire. That's just going to plow straight over it. You won't even feel the bump. So, yeah, if you are looking to use the pram off-road a lot, then definitely recommend a bigger pram. It's going to help with that.
It makes sense. And so I guess when you're looking at prams and even you're obviously at Baby B, you know, are you prioritizing the bigger wheels, or do you think that it has, you know, everything has a place? Like you said, travel cots, you kind of have massive wheels too. How do you prioritize it?
And so it's a really good question, and it's the reason why there is no one perfect pram out there and why so many customers and parents will end up having five prams over the course of their parenting journey. Each pram has a specific use case. So you've got your travel prams that are great. They're super compact. They're super light. But they do have those smaller wheels, and those wheels potentially will wear out over time if you are off-road a lot. As you get into the mid-size prams, you don't want those super heavy wheels necessarily. If you're not off-road, if it's in a city, you want slightly smaller wheels. They're going to be fine, and it's going to mean that the pram's a lot lighter. So, yeah, it's really hard. You've just got to look at the different use case for each pram. One thing that we're big on at Baby B, so when I started the business, I didn't have kids. And so I surveyed the whole market. I am survey data obsessed to this day. And I learned about prams. I learned about what consumers want by surveying customers and asking them. So that's a big part of what we do. If we're looking at a new product, we'll go out to the market, we'll go out to our existing customers, and we'll ask them, what if you could build your dream product, what would it look like, to really help guide us with our product development?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Talking about travel prams, so a question came in around, I'm considering buying a travel pram. Is there anything specifically I should be considering in my purchase decision for a travel pram specifically?
Yes. So weight is obviously an important one, because you'll be likely carrying it around a lot. If you are traveling by plane, then throughout the airports, you're probably going to be carrying it over your shoulder or just holding it. So weight's a big one. Size, obviously another big one. Whether you're on traveling by plane and want to take it as cabin baggage, which means you can push the pram right up until you're on the plane, it's going to need to be really compact to be able to fit in those overhead lockers. Even if you're not traveling by plane, maybe it's an interstate car trip, you still want to maximize your boot space. So the size of the pram is really important. Another thing would be the seat recline. So not all travel strollers have a seat that can recline fully flat. A lot of them, it's only a very partial recline. So having a flat seat is perfect for naps, really. It means you can be out and about all day long. Your little one can sleep in the pram, or they're more likely to sleep in the pram when it's flat. If you are traveling with a newborn you definitely need that flat surface. So you're going to need a seat that either reclines all the way, or you can look at something like our Millie and Coop Pixie. That's a travel stroller that you can put on a newborn pack. And when you do that, the newborn pack is parent-facing. So it's a little flat seat, parent-facing. It still folds with the seat on. You don't need to take anything off, and you've still got that ultra-compact package at the end.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because how old, is it based on age or height around how when they would transition from the flat pram, like lying on their backs, to being inclined on like a seat? What do you know much about that?
So with a bassinet in Australia, under the standards, a baby can be in a bassinet up to 9 kilos, or when they are able to start sitting up. So once they're sitting up unaided, then they can transition into a seat. If you've got a seat that is capable of going fully flat, not a bucket seat, but a true flat lay seat, they can be on that seat from birth, and you can start gradually putting the seat a little bit further upright as they're developing that neck control. The key thing that you want to avoid is that their neck isn't or they're not able to hold the weight of their head yet, and their neck, as they're sleeping or getting tired, their neck falls forward and is restricting oxygen flow.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. A question came in talking about sleep. They said, how long is it safe to allow our child to sleep in a pram for?
Good question. So under the latest Australian pram standards, all bassinets have to have a warning that says this product is not suitable for unsupervised sleeping. So that means no overnight sleeping. If they're in a bassinet, it's a completely flat surface, so they could be in there all day if you wanted. They've got room to stretch out and move around, and they're completely flat, so it's good for their spine development, and you can be sure that their airways are clear. So in a bassinet, there's no restriction as long as it's supervised napping. Where you want to be a little bit more mindful is more with car restraint. In a car capsule, their spine ends up in a C-curve position. And so that's, again, their head can be forward and reducing the amount of oxygen that they're getting. So they will have maximum use limits, which are usually around 2 hours. So if you're doing long car trips, or if you've got your capsule on your pram, then you want to be taking them out around every 2 to 3 hours just to give them a break and make sure that they're okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. As you were talking, another thought came to mind, you know, with even bassinet safety, regard like pram or otherwise. Any guidance around, because I know a lot of people can get quite excited and want to put lots of fluffy things in, you know, obviously blankets, but then even like a pillow or like the soft toy, maybe like 3 soft toys. And like, then you start thinking, oh, we're getting really cramped in this little pram or bassinet, whatever it looks like. Do you sort of advise keep it as simple as possible from a safety perspective, or are there any safety things we need to be mindful of?
Yeah, we would always go back to the Red Nose Safe Sleeping Guidelines. I guess because they're not technically sleeping or unsupervised sleeping in a bassinet, as long as you've got keeping a very regular eye on them and looking at them, it's not so much of an issue putting other things in there, because you're going to see the moment that blanket goes over their mouth or that they press up against the toy, you're going to see it and you can stop it. If you're going to be sort of coming in and out of the room, I'd probably say just take those things out and keep it as clear as possible with nothing in there.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm talking about pram. So another person said pram accessories. So are there, I mean, you even just mentioned you've done a number of focus groups. You know exactly what the market is looking for. What were people saying around things they couldn't live without when it comes to pram accessories?
Yeah, good question. So at both Baby Bee and Millie and Coop, we try and include what we call essential accessories in every box, so that you don't need to worry about what do I need, what do I not need. You don't get to check out and be like, suddenly there's an extra $400 worth of cost that I've got to add in. So the key things that our customers have said that they wanted: rain covers, UV covers, a handlebar bag, and seat liner is a big one.
That's amazing. So you include some of those.
We pretty much include all of those things with most of our brands. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So I'd say if you're looking at a pram that doesn't include all of those things, I'd say have a think about when Bub's born. So if it's going to be winter, maybe it's something warm, a foot cover, a little soft cocoon to keep them warm, things like that. A rain cover, definitely, if it's going to be raining a lot in winter. It's summer, definitely look at your UV covers. I think a handlebar bag is an essential accessory. They're just amazing. So handy. Once you have them, you can never go back to not having one. Things that you could think about later would be your toddler board. So if you're having one and then you might have another one later, come back and buy that toddler board if or when you need it. And probably a snack tray as well. I think that's something that you can come back to later when the time comes.
Yeah, that was critical for us. Yeah, so many. This is bringing back memories for me because I've got a 3.5-year-old and a 5-year-old now, so we're kind of a little bit not as much in the hecticness of the of pram life. I mean, we pull the pram out every now and then for the youngest, but it's But I just remember, my goodness, that snack tray, the bag, like just so many things that just makes your life easier because you're already juggling so much, and it's just it's such new territory, particularly for those newer parents, that you want to make your life as easy as possible. And this is where I see such merit in investing in a really great quality product when it comes to particularly prams. I think there's other things like you can get away with, like, get the beautiful Target t-shirts. Like, it doesn't matter. You go, clothing, certain things, it's not a big deal. But when it comes to critical elements that I would be spending my money on, it's the car seat, it's the pram, it's those things that they're in and out of all the time. And you just don't have the time or energy to be fiddling around and trying to hold 7,000 bags while pushing a pram that's got stuck on a rock because the wheel's too small and all the things, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is the worst. So I so see that. I mean, I guess I'm curious from your perspective too, and like, we don't have unlimited budget. So what would you be advising people, like as far as baby products go? Like, where would you be investing your money?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd say the critical things for me that you want to have sorted up front, obviously your pram, your car restraint, as you said, a bassinet, so a safe place for Bub to sleep. Safe place to put Bub down. So when you're at home by yourself, you want to have a shower, or you need to get some cooking or laundry done, or just need a spare second, having somewhere safe where you can put Bub down is going to be important. For me, a really good baby bath. I used the Skip Hop Mobi and it was a game changer. So definitely look into that one. Your change table, those things you've got to have, but you can get those types of furniture items, I think, from cheaper alternatives these days. I think you can probably hold off on buying things like your cot because that'll come later. Anything electric, I think you can hold off on to wait and see, does your baby need movement to sleep? If so, maybe a electric rocker is important, but hold off and see what you feel your baby needs once they're here. Same with breast pumps and bottles and all of those things. Wait and see, if you are planning to breastfeed, wait and see if you need it or not after that. And then, as you said, like toys and all clothes and things like that, there's a lot of amazing places where you can get cheaper alternatives now. So,
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, Target is one of my favorites. So definitely love me a Target, but more to the point that they, in comparison to other brands, they're, absolutely, more economical, which I love. But as I was saying, it's so good. Yeah, I just think make your life as simple as you can. And definitely, these things are certainly, even as far as the accessories, are things that I would never have thought of until you're in the thick of it and you go, oh, wow, like, there are other things that can support me in this moment. We had a question from an audience member who actually said, look, if I know I want to have more than one child, how do I shop smarter when I'm purchasing my first round of baby products? So should we start with the pram, and then I'd just be curious outside of that. So what are we looking for?
So I guess your option is to look at a single to double inline pram. So this is a pram that you can just have the one seat or bassinet on. And later you can add a second seat or bassinet to it. So they work really well either way, whether you've just got one or two seats on. Obviously the benefit of that is potentially you don't need to buy a double pram later on. They typically will have larger wheels, so they will feel more sturdy and they'll be better off-road. And typically they will have bigger baskets as well because they are longer. The trade-offs and the downsides to doing this is they have to have a larger footprint to be able to hold almost 50 kilos or more of weight. So they are going to be bigger. So if you have a small hatchback, this is going to take up most of your boot space. So probably not ideal. Also, if you are really concerned about the weight of your pram, so if you're worried that you might not be able to fold and lift it yourself into the car, or if you just want something that's as light as possible, then this is probably not going to be the product for you. And then I'd always recommend just in those instances, go with a product that's going to make your life easy now and think about your second child option later. If you're buying a pram that's sort of over, you know, $700, it's going to have pretty good resale value as well if it's a quality product. So you can always look at selling it then and purchasing something else, or you could look at adding a toddler board depending on the gap between your kids.
Yeah, we love ours, the toddler board. It's an absolute game changer. One thing you mentioned around the double pram. So I never realized how big these things are. And we live in a townhouse in Melbourne, and you know, the entrance to the townhouse gate where all the townhouses are would not even fit a double pram. So I realized that down the track, but it was fine because we knew we wanted to have two children. So we bought the pram, I think, that you mentioned earlier, where it's set up for there's the two seats, kind of one's at the top, one's kind of down the bottom, versus them being this wide pram. And I thought to myself, good thing we did that, or I would have been like there with my double pram, like pushing it through, trying to get it into my house, being like, how's this gonna work? Like, pack it down. And I guess that's another question. I mean, I've got, I live in the inner city, you know, spaces are tight, and even from a storage perspective, prams can be quite big. So I'm just curious, you know, from hearing from the community as well, have people, you know, ask that question, like, hold on, what are the storage, what's it like, should I be will I have to pack it down all the time, because also who has time for that? Like, did any of these discussions come up from your research?
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing that we've found is that there is no one perfect pram out there. Every family is different, so we always say to customers, definitely look at reviews and listen to your friends and family and hear from them about what they liked and didn't like from their prams. But at the same time, you also really need to think about your own family, your lifestyle, how you think you'll be using the pram, where you live. Is it a small house? Are you in a rural area? How are you going to be using it every day? And then prioritizing the features that are going to make your family's life easier. So what's the perfect pram for your bestie? It may not be the perfect pram for you. You could have, as you said, you might live in, you know, a second story home, and you've got to take it up and down stairs all the time, whereas she's got a big double garage where she can just wheel it in, not have to pack it down. You may use your car every day. She might not. It's really important. That's what we say to all first-time parents, is just really think about how you're going to be using the product. We've actually got a really good guide on the Baby Bee site called the Ultimate Pram Buying Guide for First-Time Parents. I don't know if we can link it in the show notes or just have a look on the Baby Bee website. But that will talk you through, or take you through, all of those sort of questions to ask yourself to help you get that prioritized list of what is important to me and my family, and help you make those decisions.
Yeah, I love that, because you don't know until you until you're in it, and then you're like, oh Jesus, the double pram's not fitting through my gate, or you know, oh Jesus, I didn't buy a snack thing and now my kids just put their snack all over their lap. Like, great. There's so many little, I mean, I guess that's less of a problem for a baby bee product where sort of, you know, it, these accessories come with it, but certainly, you know, these are things you just don't know until you're in it. So I love that. So was there, I guess, as the sort of last moments with you and your words of wisdom, is there anything else that wasn't brought up by our audience members that you feel you've been asked before or you feel has been, you know, really helpful for you as a parent too?
So one question we do always get asked that is not pram related, but how do you transport your baby in the car? What do you need? I think it's probably even more confusing than looking for your first pram when you've got to work this out. So the key things to know, you've got for a newborn, you've either got a car capsule, which is sometimes called an infant carrier or a baby carrier, and a car capsule will take you from 0 to 6 or 12 months, depending on the product. And a car capsule can click in and out of your pram, in and out of your car. It also has the ability to click onto your pram as well. So you'll install the base into your car and you can then clip the capsule in, and with one quick little movement, you can take it out. You can then walk them inside and leave them sleeping and just put it down on the ground, or you can put it onto your pram if you're out and about, and then that way you're not having to wake Bub from the car to get them into the pram or to take them inside. For me, that is a game changer product. Anything to not have to wake your baby, again, making your life easier.
Yeah,
I think if you can afford it, definitely. It is an extra cost, but I think it's well worth it. Yeah. And it's something, again, that you can use if you do have a second child. You'll use it again, or you can pass it on to friends and family. The other option is the convertible car seat. So these will usually go from 0 to 4 years. And that is a seat that starts off rearward facing in your car. So baby's facing the rear of your car. Once they hit the height markers, which is, I think, around 30 months, don't quote me on that, then you turn the car seat around and they'll be forward facing. And, again, that's up to around 4 years, or when they hit the shoulder height marker that's marked on the car seat. That stays in the car. Can't come out and go on your pram or go inside. It just stays in the car. So, you're only buying the one product then, so it's a little bit more cost effective. But you do have to wake your bub potentially if they fall asleep in the car and you've got to take them out.
Yeah, and I just think sleep is just so, I mean, again, when you're in it and you've got a little bub and you're, you know, you perhaps are a little sleep deprived yourself, and, you know, you're just like, please don't stir as I try to transition you from the car, you know, out of the car. For myself, the capsule was an absolute game changer. And to be fair, like, I actually was able to sell, once I was, you know, the kids had grown out of it, I sold it on Facebook Marketplace and got a little bit back as well. So I don't know, to your point, if you are able to invest in it, I would even say from my experience, I'd highly endorse that move. So it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Em. I'm curious, like, what's next for Baby B? What's next for you?
Okay,
tell us.
We have a big product roadmap ahead of us, so lots of new products coming up over the next couple of years. And we're also expanding into new markets. So at the moment we're in New Zealand and Canada as well as Australia, so there'll be more international expansion. And for me, who knows, maybe another baby down the track. We'll see.
Wow, honestly, girl, keep kicking those goals. And thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, leave us a rating or review, and share it with your friends. Want to contribute to the conversation? Hit us up on Instagram at ParenthoodPod and join our Facebook group. Until next time.
Thanks for listening.
The Parenthood Podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we produce on, the land of the Wurundjeri people. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging.